The Hoop Collective is presented by QuickBooks. New business? No problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. So it's been 2 years since I've been in Manhattan. 2 years to the day where I went and left here and went to LaGuardia and didn't fly for a year. And appropriately, as I'm back working in New York, all three of us are on the road for the first time, I think, post-pandemic. Joining us from Philadelphia, where he will be going to the very highly anticipated 76ers Nets game tonight. Of course, it's Thursday afternoon, is Tim Bontemps.
That is correct. Hello, guys.
Joining us from Memphis, where he is on assignment, I don't know what the assignment is, one always wonders, is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. We're covering the NBA here, Wendy. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
There's a pretty good little team across the street.
There sure is. So we are now about a month away from the end of the season. We've obviously talked a lot about the MVP race. So I thought I would talk today, would talk today about the other award races, because there's some spicy ones. I mean, there's so much focus on the MVP this year. I get it.
And we'll do a straw. We're doing a straw poll again in a few weeks too. On the books. That's on the books officially. So we could talk about it more then.
I wonder if any of these awards are spicy enough for Bontemps to refer to you, Wendy, as a jackass.
I doubt it, but we'll see.
I hope so.
Don't need any spicier for you as one moment, man. So we'll get to that at some point.
Anyway, I was trying to say Jokic had another great game on Wednesday. Yeah,
we heard your joke. We heard it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
might have to give serious consideration to giving him my vote.
Oh, you might have to consider voting for him?
No, Wendy might have to consider putting him on his ballot this time.
Yeah. The record will show I have first place vote for me 2021. So I thought we would start with Rookie of the Year. This was a race that I think, you know, if you took a straw poll on this, you know, six weeks ago, you would have probably gotten a heavy Evan Mobley and then Scotty Barnes from the Raptors right behind him. Cade Cunningham has been really coming on since the All-Star break, which is 8 games. He's averaging 21.6 points, 7 rebounds, 5.5 assists. On 45% shooting. You know, he obviously got off to a slow start this year because of the injury. He didn't shoot the ball well coming out of the gates. Obviously, the Pistons have been one of the league's worst teams. But he is making a very strong push. I talked to him when I did all those interviews with the rookies. I talked to him, and he it didn't make the podcast, but he was very, very clear that he absolutely saw himself as still in the race and was not selling for anything less than winning it. And he has played that way. They've played better as a team as well. They have a couple of decent wins recently. So, but Mobley has been good all year. And since Jared Allen went out, he had a bit of a rookie wall February. His numbers dipped a little bit, especially his shooting numbers, but he has started to play better as he's gone to more full-time center. And, you know, Scotty Barnes continues. Scotty Barnes has had a couple of just spectacular games. Bontemps, this race, I don't know if Mobley has too much of a lead, but I think this thing's still open.
I don't really. Cade has been awesome lately. It's been super fun to watch. He is super fun to watch. He just plays with an awesome pace of the game. He never looks rushed. Some people have compared it to how he plays a little bit like Luka, which I can see. Like, he's always kind of under control with the ball. He knows what he wants to do. He gets to his spots. He's a big guard. He's a really good passer. But he was not very good the first couple of months of the year. He missed all training camp. He had this ankle injury. He had to kind of work his way in. And in a normal year, in a normal rookie class, he probably still would have been good enough to win rookie of the year because he's awesome. But in this year's rookie class, with Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes having huge roles on teams that are going to be in the playoffs, or at least have a good chance to be in the playoffs, I think those guys are the clear 1 and 2. And I think Cade is probably going to be 3. I think you can make an argument for a couple other guys there too. Franz Wagner has been really good in Orlando all year. Josh Giddey's gotten hurt. I think he was in the mix until he hurt his hip and is going to be out the final few weeks of the season. I just don't think Cade, I think Cade's start, for as good as he's been, I think his start was too slow for me to really give him serious consideration to move past either Barnes or Mobley rookie of the year race this year.
Yeah, I think he'd be number two on my ballot. I do think he'd be above Barnes. And I hear what you're saying about the slow start, and it is rookie of the year, not rookie of the second half of the season. Right. But, you know, since he came back from when he missed four games, he came back. So this is from early January on. You know, he's 18, five and change. The Pistons are, like, they're competitive now. They're, yep. You know, they're winning as much as they're losing. I mean, these last nine games, I think they're like 6-3. You know, he's putting up great. Now, he's still not shooting the ball really efficiently, but he is playing winning basketball.
For
he's
sure.
Also, you see so many rookies, and Barnes and Mobley obviously are significant exceptions here, but you see so many rookies that you hide defensively, or they're massive defensive liabilities. You know, he's guarding a lot of times the other teams,
guarded DeRozan down the stretch of the game that they lost to the Bulls on Wednesday night. I mean, DeRozan cooked him a little bit, but they had him on there and he won.
Right. DeRozan got buckets, but that doesn't mean he did a poor job defensively. DeRozan hit tough shots, which he does against a whole bunch of teams. And so I heard Dwayne Casey, I forget, it was after one of their recent wins when, you know, Cade was phenomenal. And Casey's lobbying for his guy, you know, which coaches do.
Sure.
And he said it's not even close from a talent evaluation standpoint who the best rookie in this class is. And I think you can make the argument that what we're seeing from Cade, you know, justifies that, hey, this guy is the best player in his class, and he was the right pick at number one overall. That can be true, and it doesn't make him the rookie of the year because, again, that's based on who had the best season. I put him a notch below Mobley just because Mobley's been really good from start to finish. You know, Barnes is obviously in that conversation as well. Let me ask this, though, and I was thinking of this last night also after reading your, one of your recent polls, Bontemps, the 6.6 young point guard polls.
Yep.
Where would Cade fall in that mix? And more specifically, Cade Cunningham or LaMelo Ball for the next 15 years? Who are you taking?
I thought about including Cade in that poll. And for people that didn't see it, I asked a bunch of scouts and executives to rank Luka, Ja, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Trae Young, LaMelo Ball, and Darius Garland. And I thought about including Cade in that, and I asked a couple people, and essentially what I was told was he's barely played, so it's kind of hard to compare him to these guys who are a few years into the league as of now. As for me, I would definitely take him over Garland, and I think I would take him over LaMelo because, like you said, the ability to play at both ends of the court with him is pretty big. Like, he's at least going to be a solid defensive player, if not better than that.
Big. He's
right. Yeah, he's a big, strong, competitive size. Dude. Yeah.
Sure is. And I think to your point, McMahon, like I think you said it perfectly. Cade might be the best player in this class. Like early in the year, there were a lot of people who bagged on him right away. Were like, this guy's gonna be a bust as a number one pick. Evan Mobley should have been the number one pick. This is such a disaster. And like the guy was hurt, he missed all training camp. He's now rounded into form. He looks really, really good. But it's the rookie of the year. It's not the rookie of the final 3 months. And again, if this wasn't a historically good rookie class, he probably would be rookie of the year. Like, you go back through a lot of these rookie of the year races, it ain't exactly, there's not exactly a ton of competition like this. But you can, I mean, this year's rookie class,
this ain't Malcolm Brogdon against 31 games of Joel Embiid.
Right. That's right.
I voted for Embiid. I know that'll surprise you guys.
Well, we haven't even talked about
that. By the way, how's that held up to history? Voting for Joel Embiid for Rookie of the Year.
Well, but again, look, Cade Cunningham might very well end up being clearly the best player in this class, but that doesn't make him deserving of Rookie of the Year. Yeah. I would have voted. I didn't have a vote that year. I also would have voted Embiid.
I voted for Brogdon that year. I will say,
of course,
I
don't.
He played 700 minutes. I thought Embiid was going to be great. He played 700 minutes. I thought, like, you had to.
All right, we don't need to
get into that. The other guy I was going to say we should mention is Herb Jones, who I think deserves to get at least some recognition. You look at what he is doing for the New Orleans Pelicans. He's basically their primary stopper on defense. He's a 35-36% three point shooter, big, long, athletic wing player. Like, he's already looks like a really good defensive player as a 35th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
That's a game changing kind of pick for them to get a guy who looks like a long term starter on the wing is a good, has a chance to be an elite defensive player. So opening he's at least night, worth mentioning.
Opening night in New Orleans. I was there for New Orleans, Philly. Maybe Ben Simmons was going to play. I was talking to David Griffin, the GM, about Herb Jones. He was so pumped up about him, and they drafted him like the 30th.
Well, probably what happened was you probably asked him about Zion. He's, oh, let me tell you about Herb Jones.
So I'm watching him go through his pregame workouts, and he couldn't hit anything. He was going around the perimeter shooting threes, and it was like a brick show out there. And, you know, Fred Vinson, the Pelicans' longtime shooting coach, is out there working with him. And Griff is like, no, this kid's going to be, he's going to be one of the best second round picks I've ever been associated with, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, he's shooting about 10% in warmups. And so the fact that he has been able to develop his shot into average, slightly above average,
35.5%. You'll take that.
Is amazing. By the way, it's also an indication that if Zion were to work with Fred Vinson, who has helped a lot of guys in New Orleans over the years, certainly helped Brandon Ingram.
Look at Lonzo Ball.
That, you know, Zion, if he would, you know, put in some time with Fred Vinson, and I mean, he's worked on his free throw shooting, but that, you know, he could improve that outside shot as well. I'm not saying Zion's ever going to be a big time 3-point shooter, but anyway,
hold on. I'm sorry, for political reasons, I need to mention Jalen Green.
Yes.
Not as a rookie of the year candidate, but certainly as a guy who came in with a lot of hype, struggled early, and is coming on strong.
Will he make the all rookie team? So you don't have to go by position.
Yeah, he's
on the rookie team.
First team, I don't know. I don't know about first team.
That's what I meant. First team all rookie. Does he make first team all rookie?
Well, let's go down the list.
And I think it's going to be Cade, Evan Mobley, Scotty Barnes. I would say Franz Wagner is the fourth one. And I would say Herb Jones ends up over Giddy for me, just on games played. The other guy that we should mention too, that would be in the mix for this, and actually might even get on the first team too, is I had to assume it with the Bulls, who has been awesome
contributor
for them and has been literally a lifesaver for them. The past couple months with Alex Caruso and Lonzo out, he's basically become their primary stopper on the perimeter. He's playing point guard a lot of the time for them. He's been awesome for them, shooting, I think, 39 or 40% from three. So I think those seven guys are for the five spots, however you decide to break
it. Yeah, I mean, if Green keeps – if he finishes the season the way he's been going lately, I still don't know if he can crack top five. We'll see. But
this is an awesome rookie class, man.
Yeah. Last nine games, 21.7 points per game, shooting 50% from the floor, 38 from three. You know, my people in Houston would like me to note that he cooked a bunch of future Hall of Famers last night.
Wonderfully said after the game, the plan was to isolate on Carmelo over and over and over again.
We don't need to mention that two of those Hall of Famers don't play defense whatsoever. And then LeBron has kind of checked out on that in the floor as well. But kinda. No, he's yes. But Jalen Green is certainly showing the potential that the Rockets were very confident he had when they took him.
Let me say a word about Scotty Barnes. We didn't really discuss him.
Yeah, we did.
Scotty Barnes at one point this year, by the way, he's averaging 15 points, shooting 49% from the field.
He is a stud.
Yeah. 7.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.1 steals. There was one stretch this year where the Raptors were really in trouble with all of their, you know, they got decimated by COVID and other stuff. He started one game at center and the next game at point guard. I don't remember. Maybe it was point guard first, center second, center first, whatever it was. He subsequently started he started a game within the last week at point guard. You're asking a rookie to do that. Now, granted, the Raptors have had challenges this year because they've been thin, but like he has played a pretty big role there. And he's, you know, his numbers are very, very similar to Mobley's. Mobley's 15 points,
eight
rebounds, three assists, one
steal. I think Scotty's, with all respect to McMahon having him third, I think Scotty's a lot closer to Mobley than Cunningham. I mean, I was just looking at it. He's almost got five win shares this year as a rookie. He's got more than Mobley. He has been an absolute monster from them from the beginning of the season, playing 36, 37 minutes a game. They have him throwing him on different defensive assignments. He's playing center sometimes for them. He has been awesome.
No, I mean, when they come through Dallas, he's the guy guarding Luka. I mean, he is a stud. If you want to put him second on your ballot, I'm not going to call you an idiot. I've got plenty of other reasons to do that.
It's just crazy how good this class is. Like Jonathan Kuminga has shown a lot of flashes with the Warriors. Quentin Grimes has been a really nice piece with the Knicks.
Moody's had some moments lately.
Chris Duarte has been really solid for Indiana. Yep. There's a lot of guys in this class that are really, really good. Like it's just a really deep.
Yeah, Shingun
is good
for Houston. They've had stretches.
I'm not my vote is not solidified. I'm leaning Mobley, but Cade Cunningham. Let's watch the next month.
Cade Cunningham is on the come, as you say, Wendy.
That's right. Well, I was going to say something else, but you don't even have to bet on the come for Cade. It's going to happen.
We're seeing it.
Coach of the year. This is one that's going to be, how many guys do we think are going to get a first place vote for coach of the year?
There's a lot of candidates.
I have eight guys that I think deserve a vote.
Whoa. Okay. Let's hear them.
Okay.
Monty Williams, Eric Spoelstra, Steve Kerr, Jason Kidd, Chris Finch, Doc Rivers.
These are on the ballot or a first place votes?
On the ballot. I think they all deserve consideration.
Okay. I thought you were talking about eight different guys who could get first place.
Well, I think they all might get first place. I mean, it's coach of the year. It's always all over the place. But the last two are JB Bickerstaff and Taylor Jenkins. I think all those guys have cases to win the award.
Did you mention Billy Donovan?
No, and I did mention Billy D. He does too. So there's nine guys. There's nine guys you can make a real case for. Coach of the year is always impossible. You can always pick seven guys.
I meant to throw out Vegas odds for all these things, by the way. Mobley's the heavy favorite for rookie of the year, -650. Yeah. Monty Williams is the pretty heavy favorite for coach of the year. He's -300. JB Bickerstaff's next at +375. And then it goes to Jenkins at +650. Yeah. And listen, I think that Monty should be the guy. I think you can make the case that Monty should have been the guy last year and that the playoffs absolutely proved that the voters got that one wrong. It's coach of the year, but I do think you have to factor in kind of the big picture, 180 that the Suns have done under his watch. And the fact that they were able to get to the finals last year, have followed that up by not just having the best record in the league, but by far the best record in the league. Despite the controversy swirling around that franchise with the whole Robert Sarver circus and that situation, which, stay tuned on that. My guess is that the NBA is going to come down a little bit harder than a future second round pick, which is the punishment for most things from the Adam Silver administration. But again, I just think that it would be hard for me to justify not giving Monty a first place vote and I know this isn't the way you're supposed to factor it in, but when I feel like he should have gotten it last year, I feel like he's deserving again after getting hosed last year.
I mean, I think you could set last year aside and just say, did anybody think the Suns were going to win 65 plus games and take this extra leap on top of everything else that's gone on? Like, no, I don't think anybody thought that. So whether you want to incorporate past years or not, I think on this year alone, Monty's more than deserving. He'd be my choice too, I think, as of now.
Yeah. So, our buddy, Kurt Goldsberry, he tweets out, he's great with his graphs, tweets out something better or worse than expected. And has the logos of every team's based on their expected winning percentage. The only team that has overachieved more than the Suns is JB Bickerstaff's Cleveland Cavaliers. And, listen, JB obviously has a great case as well, because we all thought that Evan Mobley would be joined by another high lottery pick. Let's just be honest. We thought they were going to be in that mix. not in the middle of the Eastern
Conference. I didn't think they'd have a good defense with Lowry Markin is starting at small forward. That certainly has not been the case.
So on Monty, it wasn't just the Sarver thing. Ayton was hurt and out for a while. Booker got hurt and missed.
Ayton wasn't extended also.
Yeah, that had a chance to be really problematic. Right. And he managed that. And credit to Ayton as well. But that could have been a really sensitive situation.
So then Booker was out with a hamstring and then COVID. Mm-hmm. Then Chris Paul is now out 6 to 8 weeks with the thumb. And they've kept winning. Yeah. You know, they went 3-1.
Just obliterated the Heat last night.
Right. They went 3-1. And their schedule wasn't particularly difficult at that time, but they went 3-1 without Booker and Chris Paul in that stretch. And Cam Johnson has been banged up even recently. So when I look at the way that he's changed up his defensive strategies, he's been preparing more for the postseason this year. He's done some more with Ayton defensively to get ready for it. I think he's got a very compelling case. Mm-hmm. For Bickerstaff, if the Cavs can finish in sixth place, and they've got a decent chance of that, and you look at where they were at the start of the season, and you look at that they lost two starter quality guards for the year.
Yep.
And then they had a COVID stretch. Jared Allen's been hurt a couple of times. Mobley was out for a while with an elbow injury.
Garland's been banged up.
They traded for Caris LeVert. He gets hurt almost immediately. They went through a stretch recently where they were playing a two-way guy at point guard and his backup was a 10-day guy. I will say that in the non-LeBron division, which, you know, is 11 years. So LeBron played for the Cavs for 11 years. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the most successful Cavs seasons, like the last really ever.
I mean, without LeBron, it's the best Cavs team since what? Like the Ron Harper days? I mean, come on.
Yeah, since the Mark Price, Brad Daugherty team.
They haven't made the playoffs without LeBron since 1998.
The Sean Kemp, Terrell Brandon team, right?
Yeah. Kemp was still good there. Ilgauskas was just getting going. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he can get past Monty. And I mean, I'm a big believer in Eric Spoelstra. If you look at the number of combinations that Spo has had to turn out there this year, different players, he started changing roles and everything, you know, that's the case every year. Jamie Bickerstaff in most years, I think probably gets it, and he might even get it this year, but Monty's case is so strong. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Monty is so well liked.
Yeah.
Not that JB isn't. Monty is so well liked, and what he's gone through is so significant that if you're on the bubble, I think Monty, especially with getting to the finals last year, probably pushes him over the top.
Well, and like McMahon said, there will be people who look at it and say this guy could have won it last year and didn't, so I'm gonna reward him this year too. Like that's whether that's how it should be or not, that's just naturally how this stuff goes.
Is Tibbs in the conversation this year?
Well, I think you could argue that with the way the playoffs went, the Tibbs actually did a heck of a job getting that team to where they were in the regular season. They were not good enough to be where they were, but that's a whole other.
You didn't mention Ime Udoka, Bontemps.
I think it's sort of the same thing as the Cade Cunningham thing with Ime. Like Ime's done a hell of a job turning this thing around, but the Celtics were 25-25 and floundering. And now they've completely reversed their season. Like for as good of a job as he's done, I don't think I could put him in the same conversation as these other guys who have had more success throughout the course of the season. But he's
I put him and Jason Kidd in the same boat. And it's very similar.
That's fair.
Got off to a rough start. I think, you know, things didn't click, but stuck with it, and we've seen the dividends of their approach. Yep. Certainly not just the second half of the season, but for the last few months. So I think we can say, hey, both those hires look great. It looks like the Celtics and the Mavericks made good decisions on hiring those coaches. They've done really good jobs. Those teams are both positioned to be dangerous in the playoffs, but I can't put them up there with Monty and JB and even Spoelstra as far as coach of the year.
Totally. Okay. So this is going to be, I think, another spicy one, and people are going to get in their feelings on this.
Uh-oh.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Supercuts. Let's face it, life is busy. Between work and family and more work, our to-do lists have a way of getting longer instead of shorter. Luckily, Supercuts is here to make at least the haircut part of your life easy. Supercuts is perfect for people who need a haircut but don't have a ton of time for a haircut. No more scouring the web for salons with availability. You can use the Supercuts app to find the location nearest to you and check in or just walk in. Another bonus, the salon shows estimated wait times, so you know exactly what you're in for. That way, you're only in salon when you need to be. Don't expect to stay a while. As for the cut itself, it's always super solid, thanks to Supercuts' highly trained stylists. Get in, get out, and get to that thing that you needed a haircut for. Whether you've got a big presentation coming up or a wedding, or you just need some upkeep, Supercuts makes getting a haircut effortless. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Check in now on the Supercuts app or on supercuts.com. People but before we talk about defensive player of the year, Tim Bontemps, do we have a CarMax trivia question?
We do. We do have a CarMax trivia question.
This trivia question brought to you by CarMax on the lot or online. CarMax.
So, Tim McMahon, did you listen to Monday's podcast?
Yeah, LeBron. Oh, my God. I just wish somebody would give him credit. Does anybody even know he's the number three scorer of all time? I mean, that's the like, golly. I mean, I don't even know if anybody was aware of that fact. Hey, does anybody know he has a chance to catch Kareem as the all-time leading scorer? I wish somebody would mention that one day.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because as part of the praise of LeBron by the host of this podcast, do you remember he threw out a bit of trivia during the pod? Do you remember this or no?
Hit me on the trivia.
So he said that there were five players that led the league in scoring and assists throughout their career. He named them. He said they were Russell Westbrook, James Harden, mm-hmm. Will Chamberlain, Jerry West, and LeBron James. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, LeBron discussion right before we get into defensive player of the year is fitting, but go on.
It is fitting. There is a sixth player that led the league in scoring and assists. Actually, is the only player to ever have done it in the same season. That Brian left off
Archibald.
The list.
Tiny Archibald.
Yeah, that is correct. So it's a good job by our guy who said on the pod correctly.
Golly, man, what are you the pod budsman? Well, what are you doing here?
I had to bring it up because he said on there, well, somebody's probably going to notice that since I'm doing trivia again, I got it wrong. Well, he got it wrong in a pretty big way. So we had to make sure we started with that. Now,
I mean,
that wasn't the trivia question.
No, that's not the question.
Yes.
See, and he complained about Cajones Factor of the Month dragging on.
Well, he just took minutes.
He hadn't even asked us the damn question yet.
Well, I thought you would appreciate that. Maybe not. I guess
this
not.
Is why it's only Brian Windhorst in the Hoop Collective because he wants to be able to kick us off at any point. I get lumped in with you. I am guilty by association.
I don't know about that. They
were ready to put my name on the billboards, baby. And they said, well, if we do you, we got to do Bontemps. We might want to get rid of him.
I don't know about that. All right. So since we're not talking about it today, I thought we'd bring it up a little bit. The James Harden, Ben Simmons showdown sort of is happening today here in Philadelphia. And so our guy Matt Williams from Stats and Info came up with a list of the players since 1987 when Elias started keeping track of the trade deadline that were all-stars, selected as all-stars and then traded in that season. So James Harden obviously is one of them.
Since
87. There are 11 players besides James Harden.
I mean, you have the most like, dude.
Well, I didn't know how many there would be. I asked Matt to come up with a list.
These are trivia novels.
Well,
are you asking us to name all 11?
It's as many as you can name.
They were all-stars in that season?
Yes. They were picked to the all-star team and then traded.
Okay, so Harden, Simmons. I've got two of them.
Whoa.
They were all-stars that season. Picked, yeah. Yes. They were selected to the all-star team and then traded after being selected to the all-star team.
Clyde Drexler's one of them.
Clyde Drexler is not one of them.
What? I question one the All Star selection committee.
One of them happened.
The
one of them happened last year. We talked about the trade a lot on the pod. McMahon was not a fan of it.
Well, oh God, last year is a long time ago.
So.
Oh, the Vooch. What, you know what? Listen, they've proved I was right that it would not pay immediate dividends. I still think they gave up a lot, but you know, the Bulls are right in the thick of things. So I can say maybe they knew what they were doing.
Nikola Vucevic.
Two of them happened on consecutive days in 2011.
2011.
After a season long drama.
God, I don't even, honestly, I don't remember a whole lot about 11 other than
these are all, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I remember the Mavs title run. I remember that being year one
I mean, there's a couple of these guys I didn't think you would get, but they all are like pretty massive name players who were
this trained. Is a complete fail. First of all, you can't give us like 11. That's awful, man. Come on. Also, I want credit for Clyde Drexler. You would get. Jesus. Well, so far, I think we're up to 3.
So far, you're at 0.
No, I got Harden, Simmons, and Vooch.
I mean, Simmons isn't an answer, by the way.
Okay, I got Harden
this season.
I got Harden, Simmons, Drexler, and Vooch. I got 4.
This is going great.
I don't know. Go ahead.
I guess I'll just read the list because we're not even guessing. So DeMarcus Cousins was traded during the All-Star game in 2017.
In the his post-game press conference, they whispered in his ear, "You're going to New Orleans."
That was a crazy thing to witness. Carmelo Anthony and Deron Williams were traded in 2011 on consecutive days.
I definitely should remember these.
I will ask you this one again, McMahon. This guy was traded to Dallas in 2008.
To Dallas in 2008. It's Jason Kidd.
Another guy was traded.
Avery Johnson was fired a few months later.
Another guy was traded here in 2001 to Philadelphia, helped lead them to the finals that year. He's with Mark Spears in Africa right now.
Mutombo?
It can't be Mutombo. Gary Payton was traded in 2003. And then the ones from way back in the day I didn't think you guys would get were Chris Gatling, who no one remembers as an All-Star in 97. Danny Manning and Dominique Wilkins in 93-94. I think that might have been for each other. I don't remember for sure. No, Danny Manning, I think, went to the Suns. And then Ricky Pierce in 1991. I thought at least we get the ones in the 2000s.
I mean, come on, dude.
We didn't get that.
Cutting the price of your wireless bill feels good. Really good. Actually, it feels great. You should try it. So cut your bill by switching to Straight Talk Wireless. Now offering our $45 silver unlimited plan. That's unlimited high-speed data and 5 gigabytes of hotspot for just $45 a month. Get nationwide 5G on America's largest, most dependable networks. So why pay a whole lot for your data when you can get unlimited for a whole lot less? The $45 silver unlimited plan from Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right. Defensive player of the year. So Draymond Green had a strong case for it. He's obviously been out for too long. He's not going to win it.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert.
He's a betting favorite at minus 160.
Has he won it 3 times or 2 times?
3 times.
Yeah.
I think there's 2 choices.
Yeah.
I think Gobert is one choice. The numbers obviously are very strong in his favor. I think if you want to go in a different direction, I think Giannis is the other one that I think you can make a strong case for.
So the Celtics lead the league in defensive rating. I was going to ask you, and they've got 3 guys who you can kind of try to make cases for.
Robert Williams is the choice if you're going to pick somebody from the Celtics.
Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, and Al Horford, actually, he's the guy. If you just look at numbers,
You know, which defensive analytics, individual analytics can be difficult, but he's the guy who his analytics.
Horford's been awesome this year. And so, I mean, their whole defense is awesome, but Robert Williams is the difference making guy for them on defense. Like if you ask the guys on the team, pick a guy, they would pick him.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for Jared Allen, but then you say, well, is he the most impactful defender on that team or is it Evan Mobley? So, yeah, I mean, both those guys have been phenomenal.
I think their defensive rating is, I thought their defensive rating was better when he wasn't on the court, but I might have misread that too.
Yeah, listen, that is certainly one of the stats that I do look at. It's also can be very misleading.
Definitely can be.
You know, for example, the Mavericks defense rating is better with Dorian Finney-Smith off the court. Yeah, because you know why? He's always guarding the other team's best player. So,
right.
If the other team's best player is off the court, that's probably when he's resting. So that can be deceiving. And it with Mobley, it's 105.3 with him on the floor, 105.1 with him off. So by the way, Allen is a little bit more. It's 106.7 with him on, 104 with him off. So that's the case with both of those guys. You know, how much is garbage time a factor there?
Right.
Whatever. I mean, there's a lot of numbers we can throw out on those two, especially when you look at like shots challenged. Allen is ridiculous. Guys taking shots against him with him challenging shots inside 6 feet are shooting 48.6%. In terms of expected field goal percentage, it's almost 15% lower than expected based on those shots. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal. By the way, a classic case of a guy who, like, who's the Suns' best defense player? Who's their all defensive candidate?
Yeah, Mikal Bridges, Chris, I would say, but
100%.
Yeah, Bridges probably should be an All-NBA candidate. He won't make it, but I mean, he's so good.
Right, but he's their guy who's going to guard the best player 1 through 4.
Yeah,
106.4 with him on, 99.4 with him off.
Right,
but
right.
Nobody with 2.5 brain cells is going to look at that and say, well, that proves the Suns are better defensively without Bridges. It's like, no, he's guarding the other team's best player all the time.
Right.
So, you know, that gets a little wonky. Now, that on-off is Gobert's, you know, probably the best argument that that there is. Well, not the best. One of the best arguments for Gobert this year. Basically, they're the league's best defense with him on the floor, 105.1, and would be, you know, in the 20s or so without him, 111.2. But they're all, you know, it's tough because they are 13th overall, and it's, you know, you don't see many defense players of the year from a team that's decent defensively overall.
I mean, Gobert, there are some nights when he completely owns the court. He changes the game defensively. There are other nights when that's not the case. But like, I don't know. I mean, Utah is not as good defensively this year as they were last year. There's factors at play there. They've underachieved maybe a little bit this season overall. It's a hard pick.
Of their underachieving, though, was when he was out with COVID and then a strained calf. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell was also out in a lot of those games. He's the, like, of all these guys we're talking about, Rudy Gobert is the Jazz's defensive system. Yep. A lot of it is like, Rudy, you know, they've got one other solid defensive player in the starting lineup. That's Royce O'Neal, who's asked to do way too much. And then other than that, it's like, Rudy, help us out. You know, help us out here. And like he's also the best defensive rebounder in the league. I think that matters. You know, he's right up there in terms of block shots. I do think he changes the game certainly more than any other defensive player in the league. If Draymond would have stayed healthy, I think Draymond was on track.
Draymond was going to win the award for sure.
He was, especially if the Warriors were the number one defense in the league, which they have been with him in there. He's missed way too many games. I know that's a sensitive subject for Windhorse. He thinks if a guy plays at least 10 quarters,
he steps on the court, he's eligible.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Wendy would point out that that when Draymond played 7 seconds in that one game, the last game he played, that it was scoreless when he checked out.
Do you remember when that guy Andre Ingram played for the Lakers and he had like 25 points in the last game?
I do remember.
He should have been considered, right? Considered
sixth man of the year.
Yeah.
Or 16th man of the year in his case.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw the, what are they, the South Bay Lakers?
Yeah.
I saw them in the airport and he was there. Is he still playing, Andre Ingram?
I believe he is.
He might be coaching. I thought he was. He might be coaching them.
He was with the team when I saw him in the airport. Bunch of big fellas checking in and flying.
Yeah, he's still playing for them. It appears.
Wow. Okay. So the last two here, I'm not sure. There's a lot of drama. Most Improved is another one of those. Now it can be sometimes a little controversial because sometimes players, like in their second or third year, you expect them to improve. And so if a player takes a jump, sometimes it doesn't always. I think Ja Morant.
He's minus 1,400. I mean,
Ja's going to win. The only other guy I think who's got a shot is Darius Garland.
Yeah, he's plus 1,500. Miles Bridges is plus 900. He's the number two guy on the odds. Ja's vote would go to Desmond Bane, his Memphis teammate. He's plus 8,000, I think. In Ja's mind, Desmond Bane's in his second year, right?
I mean, again, that's kind of a
Ja's mind, I don't vote for second year players.
In Ja's mind, he's too good to be the most improved player.
You know, that is a thing. Well, that is a thing that exists.
But
how dare you say I'm improved? I was always this good.
Well, he's taken the leap from star, you know,
to superstar.
One of the last guys who didn't make the All-Star cut to superstar MVP candidate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
part of sleep to make. Yep.
The other is sixth man of the year.
This is an easy one. This is an easy one. Your boy.
Minus 2,000.
I believe I said at the beginning of the season, if Hero played well, it would massively impact the Heat.
Yeah, you were ready to anoint him a Hall of Famer at the beginning of the season, as you have been since he walked in the league.
He was ready to anoint himself an All-Star. Like, there was the funny thing about that is, like, was there much of a push for Tyler Hero to be an All-Star this year?
There was in Miami. I don't think there really was anywhere else.
I mean, and he was like, oh, I couldn't believe I didn't make it.
There was some devastation in Miami. He didn't make the All-Star game, which I thought was kind of devastated.
Where are you on your Tyler Hero over LaMelo Ball declaration? I mean, it's just a question.
What a sigh. Just a sigh.
It's just a question. I asked about Cade Cunningham over LaMelo Ball. I think the way it was framed
was, who would I consider more untradeable?
No, that was not it.
Where are we on that?
Here's what I'll say. We don't need to make more fun of Brian on that. What I will say is Tyler Hero is in literally the because we know we're right about it. Tyler Hero is in literally the perfect role now, though, in Miami. Like, he is in a perfect situation, coming off the bench on a team that needs him to come in and fill it up. Not too much different than Jordan Clarkson in Utah, though he's more efficient than Jordan Clarkson. But like that, this is the perfect role for him. And he's really taken it and run with it. He's been awesome at it. Like, he's the easy win. I was looking at candidates this morning. Like, Cam Johnson's been good coming off the bench in Phoenix. You know, and Kevin Love has been really good for the Cavs coming off the bench.
Didn't even make the cut as far as the odds go. The next guys are Kelly Oubre, Kevin Love, Montrezl Harrell, Buddy Hield. Then we get to Jordan Clarkson, Jalen Brunson, who's a starter.
I think they just went through by number of points scored. So. But yeah, to me, Tyler Hero's a runaway winner.
Tyler Hero gets up 17 and a half shots a game in 32 minutes. He comes in ready to go. He's getting up shots at the scores table, man. he does not need to warm up. He is ready to roll when you bring him in the game. And I will say, we'll see how it plays out for the Heat. But, you know, Oladipo looks like he might have some juice. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But that's a heck of a 1-2 punch off the bench in a playoff. You know, they roll out a terrific defensive starting lineup, and then they got two gunners that they can bring in off the bench. And then, you know, depending on the nature of the game, maybe you leave the gunners in, maybe you go all defense.
Right.
Victor can give them anything. That's a huge win.
By the way, speaking of the Heat, we didn't mention Bam Adebayo for Defense Player of the Year. I think that's because of the time missed, but he is, had he been healthy all season, he absolutely would be in that conversation.
He'd be in the mix too, for sure.
All right. Before we go, I kind of wanted to take a look at what's been going on with Boston. Because earlier this year, we talked a lot about how frustrating they were to watch. I had such such high hopes for Jason Tatum this year, and he was really frustrating me the way that he played. Well, Tatum has been just incredible. Last 20 games, Celtics are 17-3. I don't know if they play tonight, so I don't know if this is...
They play Friday against Detroit and Cade Cunningham, actually.
I know they've got a 7-game road trip that they're on, so... last 20 games, Celtics 17-3, 30 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, 5 assists, 50% shooting, 39% on threes.
It's pretty good.
You know,
I mean, he's playing at an all NBA level.
We've talked in the past about how, what kind of a bargain contract the Celtics got Jaylen Brown on. You know, they got him at significantly less than the max. Last year, Jason Tatum was a borderline All-NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make it. He wasn't the first out, but he was in the, you know, amongst the top three. And that cost him hitting his Rose provision, the Rose multiplier. I think it was in the neighborhood of 30 or 40 million. It would have got him.
Yep.
He is now, considering he is playing like a first or second team all NBA player. The Celtics, I mean, it's uncouth to talk about this, to say, oh, well, you know, we dodged a bullet because he didn't make all NBA. He's now got to have one of the best bargain contracts.
Well, and by the way, they also extended Robert Williams. One of the first things Brad Stevens did besides trading Kemba Walker was give Robert Williams a 4-year, $50 million deal. And a lot of that was on potential. Because he'd been injured a lot his first 3 years, and he's been unbelievable this year. He's another guy that he'll be on the most improved player ballot too. Like, he's been phenomenal for them, and he's on a great deal. So those are their three pillars going forward.
And they traded Kemba Walker for Al Horford. Now, they used the first. Kemba's on the bench, and Al Horford is helping him.
Oh, Al Horford is we talked about how big a part he is of their defensive dominance. And I mean, Tatum, like, he put up all NBA numbers last year. He just didn't get the votes, and I'm not saying the votes were wrong or whatever. I'm just saying it's a weird thing where, and he talked about it when he went on JJ Redick's podcast. Like, he played to the standard of getting the supermax, and then just didn't qualify. So, you know, I mean, listen.
Well, he's still gonna
be able to feed his family, but
yeah, I don't remember the exact. I probably will misspeak, and it will be brought up in the next podcast. There was some shenanigans with the positioning about who could play what positions last year and where you could vote for players at certain positions. And if I remember correctly, it penalized Tatum in a way.
Yeah. I think it was the other way around, but I'm going to look it up while we're talking. There was definitely something.
Honestly, I think they've got to figure out at some point, What are we doing? Guys eligible at guard and at center, or guys are eligible at forward? And let's just put five guys. Let's put the best 15 players on the three all NBA teams. I think the positions, like, you know, what position? Like, people think Luka Doncic is a forward. He's not a forward. He's a point guard. You know,
Tatum had more votes than Kyrie, but because he was a forward and not a guard, he didn't make the all NBA team. That was
right. And there was somebody, right. There was somebody that they positioned at forward who should have been a guard. I can't remember. Was it Jimmy Butler?
Jimmy Butler and Paul George both were guys that were at forward that you could argue are guards if you want.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it certain, I mean, the Celtics are under the tax this year with this team. That's because of that.
Tatum was the top forward left out. He ended up with 69 points, which is nice, but it's not enough to get him on the third All-NBA team.
Nope.
You see that smile?
That was well done by our guy.
He,
Well, and look, we spent a lot of time talking about all NBA, but we should probably talk about just how good the Celtics have been. And, you know, you've got these two teams here today in Brooklyn and Philly, and the Celtics demolished the Sixers a few weeks ago after the trade, although James Harden did not play in that game, and they beat the Nets on Sunday. And I think there's a real chance the Celtics might just be better than those teams, yeah, which
beat,
I did not
beat
think
the Nets with Tatum putting up, what, 50 whatever points.
Yeah, he had 54 and kind of outdueled KD down the stretch and won the game. You know, I think they match up really well with Philly. I think if they play, I think they would beat Philly. Philly has nobody to guard them. Like, this is the thing. Like, you go back to that game Monday, they obviously demolished Chicago, but Tobias Harris was guarding DeMar DeRozan, and DeMar DeRozan was just using him as a ball rack at the start of the game. Like, they can't, but it's not even on Tobias. Like, Tobias should be guarding DeMar DeRozan, but like, they literally don't have another option to guard anybody. They had to put Matisse Thybulle on Zach LaVine because they had literally no one to guard him. And they're like, all right, Tobias, you have to guard DeMar because our other options are James Harden, who's certainly not going to guard DeMar, and Tyrese Maxey, who's 8 inches shorter than DeMar. And like, they play Boston with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like, who's guarding those guys?
Yeah.
They got nobody to guard them.
In 2022, the Celtics have the best record in the Eastern Conference, 23-8 since the new year.
So, and number one defense since the new year. So the two of the teams in front of them, Chicago and Milwaukee, have two of the three hardest schedules left. The Celtics don't have an easy schedule left either.
And this is the one other thing. The Celtics during this stretch have basically only played bad teams or injured teams for the last 20 games. The first good team they beat that was healthy was Memphis last Thursday. Every other team they've played has either been bad or injured. So now they've been awesome, and I think they are really, really good. But it is worth pointing out that a lot of these games have come against pretty subpar competition, and it will be interesting to see. They get Miami coming up in the next couple of weeks. They play Dallas on Sunday. That's going to be a really fun game to watch. Like, I want to see them play some more of these good teams like they did against Brooklyn, like they did against Memphis, and get wins against them to kind of validate what they've been doing.
By the way, you mentioned DeRozan. Something came out today. DeRozan did an interview with Serge Ibaka on his cooking podcast where they cook weird stuff. And he was talking about how...
What a random reference. It's true.
When he committed to the Bulls, the Clippers were driving over to his house in LA. And he said that it was legitimate opportunity. He had talked to Paul George and talked to Lawrence Frank, and there was something that could have been done. He said it was close to happening. There was no way that the Clippers could have done that. I mean, they would have had to do a sign and trade. Like, am I right, Bontemps? I mean, I know that I'm just hitting you with this, so you didn't hear about that, but.
I mean, there was chatter about it at the time. I think it would have had to have been some sort of mid-level deal. I can't imagine that would have been doable. I mean, they were already way into the tax. So I mean, they would have had to send out a lot. I mean, they could have maybe sent out a lot of salary and figured something out, but I don't think.
Yeah, because they would have been
hard
capped.
Picks. Yeah. They don't have picks to include.
Right.
They would have been hard capped if they
would have been hard to do. It would have been hard to do.
I smelled a rat on that one, but it was a nice thing him
is that what they were cooking
on. Maybe tune in and find out. All right, thanks for watching or listening both to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will see you guys next week.
Adios amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.